This is Frankly MSP, where managed service providers get real.
Hey, and welcome to episode 45 of Frankly MSP, the podcast for managed service providers who want to boost their productivity, efficiency, and profitability. I'm your host, Jennifer Tribe. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. A rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Does the language you use in your MSP business affect the success of your business by changing how people think of you? That's the interesting conversation we're going to have on the show today. Back when I owned a communications company, I worked with a lot of lawyers and architects and accountants and management consultants, and it was a very clear rule that when I was writing for them, we always referred to the people who engaged their services as clients, not customers. The professions are quite adamant about this and do see the distinction between customer and client as a marker of a higher level of service. Does this apply or can it apply to managed service providers? Can you help people see you as a strategic business advisor rather than a technician who fixes computer problems with a simple switch in words? Later in the show, I talk this through with Craig Pollock, founder and CEO of an LA-based MSP called FPA Technology Services. But first, our One Thing segment, where we hear from an MSP about one thing that's made a difference in their business. Today, we have Barb Pluskiewicz, CEO of CDN Technologies. Now, this One Thing segment is a little bit different from the ones we've done in the past. Barb is a member of our Frankly MSP community on LinkedIn, and we asked this question about one thing, and she answered on the community that her one thing was paying attention to the data. And when I asked her if she'd be interested in recording something about that, she said yes, and she sent us this fantastic segment on how she follows numbers and uses numbers in her business.
Hey folks, thank you for taking the time out to listen to the One Thing broadcast that made CDN Technologies a successful MSP. I'm going to share with you the three different ways to approach your numbers in your MSP so that your MSP doesn't experience a financial failure. You may be surprised to find out your MSP is on the verge of financial failure. And by listening close, I'm going to share with you what the financial failures are and how to ensure your life doesn't become a fiasco. So for those of you taking notes, my name is Barbara Pluskiewicz, and Pluskiewicz is spelled the exact way it sounds, Pluskiewicz. I am the CEO of CDN Technologies, author of IT Scams, How to Avoid Being Ripped Off, and the host of podcast No Tech Talk, and that's K-N-O-W. CDNTechnologies.com is located in Mississauga, and I have a cute fact for you. So if you've ever flown into Toronto into airport code YYZ, you've been to Mississauga. The Toronto airport is in Mississauga, and the reason why the airport code is YYZ is because MIA is not an appropriate airport code. Have you ever wondered how you can make money on paper and show a profit in your accounting software like QuickBooks or Simply or whatever it is that you're using, but you don't have any money in the bank? Like you hit no at the bank machine because you really don't want to see what your bank balance is. Thank goodness you are listening and tuned in, because I'm going to share with you some simple techniques that we used at CDN Technologies to always keep our numbers moving forward in a positive direction. Hopefully, I'll be able to save you from the problems that I had in growing CDNTechnologies.com, because you see, I'm an MSP owner just like you. I'm not a tech-turned-business owner. I'm an IT sales rep-turned-business owner. And just like you, I help secure data, secure networks, and I've been doing this for over 20 years. I've been sharing technical concepts to non-technical people so they can make good choices, like pragmatic choices, educated choices. And when I first started out, I did hire members of my family, even though I was advised not to. I completely trusted them, and maybe they did the best that they could, or maybe they didn't. Doesn't really matter. Unfortunately, they made some dramatic and strategic errors, and they didn't step up to the plate when needed. But fortunately, I had great IT and a strategic and structured sales process that saved my ass. I remember sitting at my boardroom table, which was also my dining room table when this happened, with two CRA auditors. And for all of my American friends, the CRA is equivalent to the IRS. I had tears rolling down both cheeks, not coming out of my nose, and just being too stunned to move. Even as I like reflect and like share this part, my ears are just like, oh, I can't believe I'm telling this story. And my eyes are, you know, they get a little bit watery and my throat chokes up and my chest gets tight. I don't know what it's like to get a kick in the nuts, but I do know what it's like to have a broken heart. It hurts. And at the time I had three techs. My firstborn just started preschool. I had my second baby, treated myself to a new car, a new house. Like, you know, I thought I was doing well. But, you know, as I sat there and learned what my numbers actually were, according to the CRA, I was feeling quite embarrassed, inadequate, ashamed, devastated, broken. Like, I was broken. All I thought was, I was warned about this. I was warned. My mother told me and I didn't listen. So I sat there and I just like, fudge. That's not really what I said, but I'm pretty sure you're picking up what I'm putting down. So I wiped my tears and my snot with my sleeve, like made a deal with the universe and prayed to every God that would listen. Because it then just dawned on me that this is a numbers game. I have a great sales process. I have great IT and I just got schooled. I got a great education in business from the CRA. And that's why I answered the question of what is the one thing in your MSP that made you success is knowing my numbers and knowing how to do math. I am paying forward what I learned about numbers because I am truly thankful for everyone who helped me. And also because rage, vengeance, anger, loss, and regret are tremendous motivators that clear the mind. And I'm not going to be shy about what I'm saying. So I know I'm not the only business or the only MSP that's been audited by the government. All businesses experience problems, and we want to make sure that they don't blow up and become fiascos. So we're going to go through some numbers to ensure your MSP business doesn't experience financial fiascos. The first financial fiasco that every MSP will be experiencing or has experienced or will experience, no matter what the location or how big you are or how big your sales are, like what you're charging per month or per endpoint, it's cash flow. A lot of times people have money caught up in their receivables. We noticed here at cdntechnologies.com that once we started really making an effort to keeping our receivables current, everything changed. Because what a lot of people don't realize is that when you make a sale, you have a receivable. And even if you don't collect on it, you have to pay taxes on that. So now you have an outflow of cash and nothing coming in. And I can tell you, honestly, that until I got an understanding of cash flow management, everything was a struggle. Because it is possible to show a profit in your business for the year and have no real money in the bank, or even worse, go bankrupt. Most people think if you show a profit, you're successful. But the reality is you can go bankrupt if you don't collect the money. So make sure you get paid for the work that you do. If you're still listening right now, hit pause and go and check your receivables. See how long it's been since someone's paid you and start making an effort to collect that money. Most people do have the full intention of paying you, but they just forget sometimes and you have to call them to remind them. Call them to remind them. Don't email. You can go out of business even though you are showing a profit on paper simply because you did not collect. So you want to make sure you manage your cash flow as effectively as possible because in business, cash is king, cash flow is king or queen depending. So let's assume your MSP is cash flow positive. Every month, your bank balance numbers are something that you want to look at and that you're proud of. The second financial fiascos that MSPs have with their numbers are sales. Here at cdntechnologies.com, we had to recognize our value and not be shy about it. We had to recognize that we are solving a lot of problems for people and we deserve to be paid for that. We did not want to get in debates about pricing with people, so we wanted to position ourselves in the market where we are going to be dealing with people who are shopping for IT services and understand the value of the service we are offering rather than people who are looking for cheap. There is no value in cheap, and usually people aren't comparing apples with apples. Sometimes the biggest part of our sales process is explaining to the customer and educating the customer on why we are doing things a certain way. Because someone with no IT background has told them differently. So not only do you have to have customer service skills, we have to have educating skills. One of the things that is really funny for me in the MSP business is believing the customer is always right. I can guarantee you that in all the years of sitting at the helm of CDN Technologies, the customer is not always right, especially when it comes to IT. Everyone seems to have an opinion about IT, but not everyone works in IT day to day. Some of the opinions I've heard have been quite comical. So don't argue or debate with your customers. Lots of times people in the decision-making seats don't have a clear understanding of IT. So a lot of what we have to do is about educating and providing clarification. Once people understand the value of the service you are offering, the sales numbers, they just start happening. And one of the things that differentiates CDNtechnologies.com from our competition, and there's a lot of competition here in the GTA. There are a lot of great service providers out there. There are a lot of great technicians, but you know what? Nobody knows them. And some of the things that we focus on is getting out and doing things, specifically talking with people, letting people know we can solve their problems, having a sales process, having structure and accountability around it. How many people did you tell today about what business we're in, about what business CDN Technologies does? How many people do you need to tell on a daily basis to generate the kind of revenues that you need or that you want? I would really have to say that developing your sales skills is critical to making sure that you have great numbers so that you're not subjected to a financial fiasco. So let's assume your cash flow numbers are positive. You have nothing that's overdue. Every month, your recurring revenue numbers are getting bigger. The final financial fiasco that can interrupt your MSP business is not knowing your numbers around cost and pricing. People are always going to ask for a better deal. Let me give you an example. A house is for sale. If someone goes into a high-end home that is for sale and they want to buy it, but they only have enough money to buy a small townhouse, they are not in the right market. Agreed? So there's no point in the person selling the high-end home feeling guilty that some people can't afford it. They just need to start attracting the right buyers, the right market. It's the same for MSP services. You have to think about positioning yourself in your target market. And next is, how do you price it? And I think what a lot of people overlook is that there is a range. With any market, there is a range. I'll go back to the selling of the house example. A house is expected to go for a certain amount of money, and there is a range for the neighborhood of the house, no matter what the features and benefits of the house are. It's the same with MSPs. There is a range where certain people provide extra things and certain people don't. There's the caddy version or the gold-plated version, and then there's the whole just getting by and basic version. So you want to position yourself within that range and decide what clients you want to go after. And remember, you have to know how much it costs to deliver your service. When you calculate your price, know how much money you need to have deposited in your bank account at the end of the month in order to be happy and being it worthwhile, making it worthwhile to be a business owner. Make sure you have enough money to cover your expenses. That type of philosophy, that's for amateurs, because we don't have benefits. We don't have like pension plans or anything like that. We need money for retirement, for unexpected expenses, for unintentional mistakes. So the numbers are critical. Remember, you can still go bankrupt if you're profitable on paper, but have no real money in the bank. check your receivables. Call people who owe you money. They might just have forgotten to pay you. We're all getting older. Your sales numbers will increase when you can clearly explain your value. Don't argue about tech with your customers. They don't understand tech. That's why they need you to educate them and explain things to them in a way they understand. Know your target market and offer solutions based on a number range that they can afford to buy and you can afford to sell. So what I wanted to do in this short broadcast is to just highlight what numbers I think contribute to the success of being an MSP. And I encourage everyone who wants to be successful to set aside some time and look at your numbers and receivables, your sales numbers, pricing and cost. The numbers are critical.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by AVIC Networks.
That was Barb Paluskowicz, CEO of CDN Technologies, an MSP based in Mississauga, Ontario, Canada. Now remember, this whole conversation with Barb started in the Frankly MSP community when she posted. So if you would like to ask Barb questions, add to the conversation, share what you're doing around numbers or how you're using them, please come on over to the Frankly MSP community and share your thoughts. Now we come to my chat with Craig Pollock of FPA Technology Services about how the language we use can affect how people see us. Hi, Craig. Welcome to Frankly MSP.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here. Appreciate it.
Today we're going to talk about a very interesting topic that you have written about before, and this is about language and the language that we use or MSPs use in describing who they work with. You believe that MSPs should be calling the people they work with clients instead of customers. So tell us a little bit about why you think that's so important.
I think it's a differentiating factor and it's a defining factor. And I think one of the issues that we have with our industry is how we're perceived and how people see IT services, IT support companies, and just technology in general. This is a big thing that we teach during our initial, we have what we call FPAU, our initial 3-month onboarding with new staff, but helping people to understand, especially people who aren't coming from this industry, you know, in-house IT people who are morphing into working in our industry, understanding the paradigm in which we work and serving our clients. We really position ourselves as a boutique sort of firm. And one of our positioning statements is we're a Nordstrom and a sea of Walmarts. And by that, I mean, we're really about client service. We're really about the customer service experience. Our niche is with investment advisors, CPAs, business managers, who are pretty high up there on the professionalism level. And we've been doing that for a long, long time. Originally, a lot of our referrals came from CPAs, and we did a lot of work with CPAs. We started in 91, so back in the day, business was a lot more formal than it is now, and business attire and all of that sort of stuff. And so how people perceived us, I think, is one of the issues that we're fighting. We, again, are trying to position ourselves as a high-end professional firm. And so internally, I think of myself at the same level as a doctor, a lawyer, a CPA, an architect, engineer, something that the rest of the world views as a profession. And if you look at those professions, they don't use the word customer. They use the word client because it's all about the relationship. And I think we do ourselves a disservice as an industry if we continue to use the word customer, because the reality is a customer is somebody you sell something to. A client is somebody you have a relationship with, and selling somebody to is just very transactional, whereas relational is using the word with is bidirectional. It's really the foundation of who we are. It's something that's a personal pet peeve of mine, and it's something that I think is going to hold back our industry if we don't really grasp onto this, what I think is a key differentiator.
Now, you mentioned that the traditional professions, so law, accounting, management consulting, they use the word client, not customer. And that sort of connotes professional expertise, a higher level of strategy and advisory services, this two-way relationship. Now, you also mentioned that your clients are these professional firms. So makes a lot of sense for you. Do you think it makes sense for every MSP to call their clients clients instead of customers?
Well, certainly everyone has to make their own decision about that. But I think as a whole, it depends on how do we want to be seen as an industry. And if we want to be seen as a profession versus a commodity, I think it's important to differentiate between the two, right? I think if an MSP is trying to be in this trusted advisor vein, it's not about sales. It's not about selling. It's not about a transaction. It's about the relationship. And so you can make the argument that it's subtle, that it's not that big a deal, but I just believe that language and how we use language is huge. You know, it controls people's perceptions. It controls how people see us. It just really factors into the whole conversation. So, you know, for everyone who's looking to get out of that place of fighting for commoditization of our marketplace, I think it's critical to start with how we view who we work with. And to me, that's the difference between a client and a customer.
Now, do you think the word client and choosing that over customer implies also that you're more expensive?
Could be perceived that way. But I think it's interesting, though, that if you look at these other professions, what's important to you may or may not be driven by price, right? Who you're going to work with a lawyer may or may not be driven by price or your cost. Who you're going to work with as an architect or certainly as a doctor, when the time calls for it, you're not thinking about cost. You're thinking about who's the right guy to solve this problem. And so while using that word client versus customer at this point in time in our maturity level may make people think we're going to be more expensive, at the end of the day, if I can truly provide more value, it's a win-win situation. So it's really not about the cost. It's really about elevating our industry as a whole so that we get out of this being seen as a utility and a commodity where it's just everybody's chasing to the lowest dollar.
If you look at other professions like law and accounting and so on, part of what makes them a profession is that they have a certain level of standardization. There are certain certifications you have to get. There are codes of ethics. There are governing bodies. Do you think that's the sort of thing we need to start seeing in the MSP industry as well?
I think it's only a matter of time, and I'd be behind it 100%, 1,000%. But I think the reality is if you really step back and think about this, if you look at those other professions, society as a whole really didn't think about those professions that way when they first came about. We've had hundreds of years as a civilization to understand that regulating CPAs, we've had dual entry accounting since the 1500s. Doctors have been regulated, right? You have to pass your boards. Same thing with the legal profession, the CPA profession. You have to be certified by the state. Society hasn't figured out yet how to do that. And that's what we're competing against without realizing it, that that's difficult for us, is that technology has come along so fast and so far in such a short amount of time that we haven't figured this out. Again, I say we as a civilization, we haven't figured this out. So anybody can say, hey, I'm a web developer. I'm a IT guy. I'm a data center guy. I can serve up the cloud. I'm a security guy. Now, yeah, there are vendor certifications, and there are letters that we can put at the end of our name. But at the end of the day, as a civilization, as a society, we haven't figured out how to regulate this. Anybody can do this stuff. The issue isn't so much that anybody can do it. The issue is that the key decision makers, the business owners, the people who are in charge of making these decisions are not technology people, so they don't understand the differences, right? If we go to a dinner party and somebody says, I'm a doctor, I'm a podiatrist, you would never say, great, I'm having this heart problem, can you help me? But as a technologist, if you go in there and say, I'm an IT guy, it almost doesn't matter what topic, they're going to ask you a question about it. Yeah, I'm having problems with my QuickBooks. Oh yeah, I'm having problems with my website. Oh yeah, you know, what do you think about moving to the cloud? It's like, again, society hasn't figured out these subtle differences. And I think until we do, we're battling this perception problem that we have.
Do you think that the industry will ever move in that direction? I mean, it seems like legislators have such a difficult time grappling with technology issues as it is. Do you think that as an industry, you can reach a point where it would be regulated like that?
I think it's only a matter of time. I think the issue, though, is that there's going to have to be some major pain point, right? Because if you have 70, 80-year-old people who have no idea about technology making the rules, they don't understand it. It's not going to happen. So it might take some time in terms of technology-educated people getting into those powers of position. and then something happening. We're just seeing the basics of it, the bare bones of it, just in legislation that's starting to happen, like the GDPR and the California Consumer Protection Act. These are just the tip of the iceberg, but they're almost band-aiding the situation because they're going to, hey, stop doing this, but they're not going to, hey, who are the people who can do this, right? If you think about it, 150 years ago, anybody who had the medical book and had a bottle of leeches was the town doctor, right? At some point, society said, whoa, that's kind of dangerous. Maybe we just regulate it. I just think it's a matter of time until that happens.
Do you think we'll see a shrinking of the market as more and more rules and regulations get introduced, that it sort of filters out some of the companies that are operating today?
I think it would, and I think it should. Part of the issue that we deal with is because IT is such a black box and anybody can put up a shingle and say they're an IT company or an IT guy, it makes the value proposition that much more difficult to communicate. So I think a shakeup is warranted. In some areas, it's not that big a deal. In an area like Los Angeles, I mean, we've got hundreds and hundreds of companies who do what we do. But imagine if lawyers were unregulated, or imagine if doctors were unregulated, how many people would be out there and how many malpractice suits there would be. Again, I just think it's a matter of time that society needs to figure out how to regulate us.
So do you feel your clients feel differently about your relationship with them or perceive you differently because you call them clients?
It's not just that we call them clients. It's about everything else that we do. And certainly we've got the range of clients. I'm not sitting here saying 100% of all of our clients view us as professionals. You know, it runs the gamut. But a big part of what we do with our relationships is spending time to help educate our clients to see the value of how to run IT properly, quote unquote, properly, as opposed to, can you just fix it when it's broken? As opposed to what other pieces really go into running technology from a proactive aspect, and not even from the technology standpoint, but potentially from the policies and procedures and from the planning and strategy and from the budgeting. And how can we integrate technology into the decision-making process to help the business become more profitable, as opposed to just being seen as no different than, say, the copy repairman? And no offense to them, but it's just a commodity. And how can we bridge that gap and become that true trusted advisor? And I think the fastest, easiest, most effective way is positioning yourself as a trusted advisor. So it's delivering on all of those things. And that also starts with calling people clients.
Is there other language or wording that you have consciously avoided or chosen for your company?
To us, sell is a four-letter word. Maybe it's better if I said sales is a four-letter word, but we really think about, and we talk about it this way with clients, is we're about the relationship. We're about a long-term relationship. We're about being with our clients and being their trusted advisor over the course of many years. And so the point being is, we don't need to sell you something. I'm not going to sit here and say, you need to buy this right now because X, Y, and Z. Because when we come to you and tell you you need something, it's because objectively, we truly believe this is in the best interest of you and your business. And because we have these long-term relationships, and because I know that when you need that refresh or when you need that upgrade, you're a client of ours, we're going to do it. I don't need to force that on you now because I know 2 years from now or 3 years from now or whenever it's going to happen, it's going to happen. So I think it does go to an attitude and the culture that we breed here and ultimately the relationships that we build with our clients.
What about finding and bringing on net new clients? What does that process look like? What do you call it?
Well, we do. I mean, we're not kidding ourselves here, and we're not all that high and mighty. So our new client acquisition functions fall under our business development and marketing sphere, right? We do plenty of marketing activities. We do plenty of business development activities. The big but that I would throw in there is that we're really not about selling. We're not about convincing people to work with us. We are about providing knowledge in everything that we do and value in everything that we do. And so what we try to do is position ourselves to be that, again, that Nordstrom and a sea of Walmarts, that every interaction that we have in the sales process is about value. How can we add value to help you make a decision, to help you make an informed decision, whether it's with us or somebody else, but make sure that you're doing it with as much information, as much knowledge to help you make a successful decision about who to work with and why.
Now, I know you've been in the industry for quite a few years. Is this something that has sort of gradually developed over time, or is this something that you really sort of conceived of and implemented from the beginning?
It's been a long time in play. It goes back to our roots when we were first initially working with CPAs and ultimately with RIAs, registered investment advisors, again, in that professional vein, is just really thinking about things as a trusted advisor and letting the new business happen organically. It's always been in our sort of blood. It's always been in our culture. It's really about the value proposition and who we are and what we're trying to deliver here. And I think it all stems from that.
Some great food for thought here today. Parting words for MSPs that you would want them to think about or take away from this conversation?
Yeah, look, I don't want to come off as holier than thou or high and mighty. It's not about that. It really is about, you know, as an industry, how can we elevate ourselves? How can we more and more be in that trusted advisor role? Because I think at the end of the day, that's what really delivers the most value to clients, is how do we help them move their businesses forward as best any trusted advisor, any business partner can. And so I just believe that the best way to do that is to truly be a partner. And part of that is helping them see our relationship not as a vendor relationship, but as an advisor relationship. And that just goes to every little bit of how you deliver the service to them. Hopefully that helps.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today, Craig. It's been great.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
That was Craig Pollack, founder and CEO of FPA Technology Services out of Los Angeles. What are your thoughts on this topic? Do you call the people who engage your services clients or customers, and why? Will you make any changes based on what you've heard today? I'd love to know your thoughts, so please leave us a comment on the show notes at avic.com/franklymsp/045 to let us know and join the conversation. That's a wrap. Till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Thanks for listening.
Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avic Networks, the most efficient and profitable way to manage your clients' networks.